let's curve the field a little bit and talk to someone who is a critic but is also better known as a playwright, and a very good one. And I say this not just because I know him and he's a friend and stuff like that.
And wasn't he on last week?
He was on. As a matter of fact, that last week I talked to Jeff Sweet, who is the author of The Value of Names and Porch and American Enterprise, which was that was probably his best-known off-Broadway work, although it looks like he'll start having some more stuff done locally quite soon. Anyway, we talked about a bunch of stuff, and towards the end of the interview, I asked him about some of the major categories of this year's Tony Awards and nominations. So here, from last week, for about 10 minutes, is Jeffrey Sweet weighing in on the Tonys.
Do you still see most of the Broadway and off-Broadway shows?
Well, I see all the Broadway shows because I'm on the Council of the Dramatists Guild, which makes me a Tony voter.
Oh, cool.
So I see all the Broadway shows. I get to see a reasonable amount of off-Broadway as well. And I'm also writing a blog for Backstage's online.
Cool.
So between all of these different affiliations, I usually can get in to see whatever I want to see, and I see a fair amount of stuff.
Well, as a Tony voter,
yeah,
what you voting for this year?
I have to tell you that in my opinion, this has been a kind of a doggy year.
Okay.
You know, when you think like last year, we had four really viable musicals for Best Musical. You know, there were four shows that are still running.
Yeah.
You know, we had four musicals that were hits in one season. Wow, we hadn't had anything like that since the early 60s.
And they were pretty much worthy hits. I mean, Spamalot's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is delightful.
Yeah.
Spelling Bee, what was the fourth?
And Light in the Piazza.
Well, okay.
Yeah. You know, and all four of them are hits.
Hmm.
And it was delightful, and they all had their own particular strengths, but you had to parse out which you thought had a better score and which you thought had a better book and which was overall a better production and so forth. But it was really a contest.
But this year, actually, we have four musicals that may be commercial hits, if not critical ones. If you think about the four that are nominated, there's a possibility there.
Yeah. I mean, Jersey Boys is going to make its money back, obviously.
Drowsy Chaperone is selling well because the critics loved
yeah.
it. And Color Purple is selling well because of Oprah.
Yeah, so you've got possibly three hits there, and I wouldn't be surprised if Wedding Singer ekes through as well because it makes its... It makes its audience happy. My theory is that Wedding Singer is the show that you go to see if you can't get into Jersey Boys.
Mm-hmm.
They're both celebrations of Jersey culture.
And if you're coming through the tunnel, you know, on the weekend with your parents, that's, yeah.
Yeah.
You sound less excited about that crop.
I'm not terribly happy about the scores of any of them.
Mm.
I'm sitting there. I mean, there's some lyrics that I like in Drowsy Chaperone, but I'm not nuts about the music in that, and I'm not... Of course, Jersey Boys doesn't have an original score,
right.
So they've nominated the Andrew Lloyd Webber, David Zippel score for Woman in White. I was disappointed in that. I wanted to like it more, but...
I don't think there is a score this year that's really knocked anybody. I mean, as much as people, and I had a great time at Drowsy Chaperone, I can't say that I came out of there like from an Irving Berlin musical going... Oh yeah, you know the score is just part and parcel. You know?
No, it's a very good extended review sketch. Bob Martin is from the Toronto Company of Second City, and since I'm a big Second City fan, I'm delighted for that. And he also co-wrote a TV series I love called Slings and Arrows, which is the best series I've ever seen about the theater, which is
Ooh.
A parody of the Stratford. The Stratford Festival up in Ontario. They've been running it on the Sundance Channel. And it's a very, very funny show.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I'm a fan of his. And I'm a fan of the show, The Drowsy Chaperone, but on some level I'm a little disappointed because this should have been an engaging also-ran. It should not be, you know, the favorite. This is a show that's like so many shows that have been nominated or won in the past few years, makes fun of musicals. And we've had so many musicals that make fun of musicals over the past few years, and not very many really good original musicals, you know, musicals that take themselves seriously. One of the things that was pleasing about Light in the Piazza was that it didn't mock the form. Spamalot mocked the form, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels mocked the form, Spelling Bee mocked the form.
Yeah. Avenue Q Mox as well. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Avenue Q as well.
Oh, Avenue Q, absolutely. And You're in Town. And, you know, musical's a musical.
Now, most of these musicals I really liked, I mean, I have to say. But
yeah, I think You're in Town has got a pretty tough underneath. It's actually saying something very seriously political. And that show is really much tougher than an affectionate parody of musicals. It's about how we distract ourselves with amusements and pay no attention. And we are under the illusion that because we support the right culture that we're doing something.
Right.
You know, so there's underneath it, it's actually a rather tough show with some unpleasant things. You know, we people who've seen the show forget that, yes, the corporate bad guys, you know, die. But in the epilogue, we discover that
nobody has enough fresh water.
Well, not only that, she dies too. So there's precious little comfort in there for anybody of any political persuasion in that show. It's a very tough little show.
Well, I mean, at the very end, the lead character holds up a book of Malthus and says, "Read this." I mean, that's Brecht right there.
Malthus, yes.
Well, we have only very, very little time left, unfortunately, so I want to ask very quickly about the plays of this year. And both Broadway and off, and your thoughts.
Well, I will end up voting for History Boys because it's consistently witty and entertaining, and God knows I enjoyed it, and I've been following the guys from Beyond the Fringe, ever since those days. I'm not over the moon about the play because I don't quite believe it. I enjoyed it, but I don't quite believe it. I don't believe that because this guy comes in that he all of a sudden turns everything around in the school because they succumb to his cynicism.
For me, the plays were actually weaker than the musicals. I like Rabbit Hole, though.
Well, I liked most of Rabbit Hole. I thought that it repeated its effects a little bit. I would have cut the first scene in the second act and taken out the intermission and played it as a 90-minute one act. And I think that's just my sort of meatball surgery. But every scene was about the ghost of the kid in the room and how it was affecting everybody. And how many times can you say we're devastated? We're devastated. We're devastated. Or dramatize that. That said, I liked it a lot. I just was.
God forbid you should ever have to get over the loss of that's what life is for a couple of years.
Absolutely.
After you, everything is.
But
the kid in the room.
The needs of drama are different than the needs of life. It took all evening to do what Shakespeare did brilliantly with one speech in King John, when Constance talks about grief walking up and down with her in the corridors, death of her son. I still think it was a darn good play, and I was glad it was on this season. Actually, the play that I was surprised by, because I didn't expect to care much for it at all, was Festin, which I saw late in its run.
Ooh.
And maybe when it opened, they hadn't found their ensemble. But 4 weeks in, when I saw it, I thought it was just riveting, and I thought that the performances were sensational. I thought that Larry Brigman was absolutely cheated of a nomination he should have gotten. I thought that Michael Hayden was about as good as I've ever seen him. I thought that people absolutely misunderstood what Ally McGraw had been directed to do. They say that she was giving an unconvincing performance. She's playing the part of a woman who is trying to ignore the fact that she's been living with a monster for 30 years and has done nothing about it. So the artificiality is the part. So I sat there with a friend of mine, and we were both dumbstruck by what impact it had on us. My agent, who teaches at a university, sent some of her students to see it, and they all came back, and that was their favorite show of the season. So I think it got Bum's Rush. I think it's a much more interesting play, and I certainly would have put it up if I'd been on the nominating committee. That would have been one of the ones that I nominated over.
Over Well or whatever else.
Yeah,
got.
Well, which is.
That's a Lisa Kron play about her mom.
Yeah,
or sort of about her mom, mega theatrically.
Yeah, which I.
As she said 10,000 times.
Of it, but I thought that the best parts of it were indeed the mom, and that the other stuff was tend to be either clumsy or a little cute. And The Lieutenant of Inishmore, I thought it was just wonderfully crafted, but it made something beautifully that I just didn't care for. I think that this is a Martin McDonagh, his guiding aesthetic is what can I do to get at the audience? How can I make them squirm, or how can I make them? And he's done this in play after play after play, and I find that slightly juvenile.
Well, he is. When he was writing these things, he was in his early 20s.
Yeah, I know, and this is very obviously sort of, okay, I'm going to try to do on stage what Quentin Tarantino did in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Just as Lonesome West was his response to True West and American Buffalo. And on some level, you know, as well done and as well crafted as it is, and I think Inishmore on some level is one of the best crafted plays he's done. The mock disemboweled people on stage and all the blood packs that didn't explode and all the rest of it, I thought that really he ultimately was not making a point so much as jolting the bejesus out of the audience. I felt very similar about The Pillow Man, although The Pillow Man I found actively distasteful.
You know,
I thought it pretended to be about something and really was only about getting a rise out of the audience. I know a lot of people who don't agree with that, and that's fine. That's why we have conversations, you know. But I'm not a part of his...
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes writers develop. I remember that in the early days that Richard Greenberg's plays were very superficially clever and glib, and I was not a big fan. And then he wrote Eastern Standard, and that seemed to signal a transition. And then after that, he wrote four or five plays that I just think are glorious, you know, culminating in Take Me Out. So I'm, even when he doesn't succeed, I'm always eager to go to see another Greenberg play because between that and The American Plan and a few of his other plays, some of those plays are just gorgeous.
Well, that was the surprising thing about Rabbit Hole from David Lindsay Abaire. I mean, his other plays were these kind of audience-baiting, goofy, weird, sort of sick trailer trash fantasy things where his trademark was becoming...
What outrageous thing can I do now?
Yeah.
Yes, and I think that represents an advance for him. It was like...
it was a leap.
Nikki Silver had a play... it was done at the Vineyard, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was a real revelation from him. It was such a break in what he had done before. It got creamed by the critics, but I went with a friend who joined me reluctantly because she was not a Nikki Silver fan either. And at the intermission, we looked at each other and said, "Am I nuts, or is this really good?"
Hmm.
And we were, you know, tremendously impressed by it, tremendously moved by it. What he had suddenly done was found a point of empathetic contact with his own characters. Rather than making fun of people's pain and downfall and embarrassments, he actually, you got a feeling that he cared about the characters for the first time. The wisdom had suddenly arrived. And that once wisdom arrives, you never go back to writing juvenile stuff. You know, easy jokes about people's infirmities or...
Well, I still like easy jokes about infirmities, so I still have that juvenile streak, but I'm thrilled. Jeffrey Sweet has been with us sharing his wisdom and his theater experience, and I want to wish you best of luck.
Well, thank you for inviting me. My pleasure.